Good evening. And now, the Inspirational Quarterly.
Do you want to give me a pre-podcast audio check?
One, two.
I'm just kidding. The podcast has already started. Welcome back to the Inspirational Quarterly. Gotcha. Welcome back to the Inspirational Quarterly. It's the world's only podcast dedicated solely to reviewing and discussing the 2006 novel StarCraft Ghost Nova by USA Today bestselling author Keith R.A. DeCandido. I'm Davey Reedon, and joining me, even though she didn't even realize it at first, is Kara Ellison. Hi, Kara.
Hi, it is me. I'm here also.
Another classic Davey gag here on the Inspirational Quarterly.
I will kill you!
I know! Ha 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 ha! I like to think that I'm not actively drawing podcast content out of you by literally antagonizing you on a real personal level, but who knows if that makes for good podcasting content. We got a couple short emails this week. I got an email from James Clayton who says, James mentions the TV show Magic Roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. I hadn't.
Oh, you're not familiar? You would like it, actually. It's one of the shows that strikes me as being a Davey show. So.
Well, yeah, and I enjoyed it. As soon as I looked it up, I enjoyed it very much. And it's essentially someone took a different French TV show and then redubbed over it for the BBC.
Yeah, and it's
completely different. Yeah,
it's completely batshit.
So anyway, the suggestion was to do the same thing with Family Guy. Since last week I watched Family Guy without audio, was to record my own version of it, sort of Magic Roundabout style. Cool idea. God damn, do I not want to live in the family world of Family Guy. I don't even know how. I appreciate the implication that I or either of us has a mastery of the English language sufficient to pull Family Guy's visuals out of the territory of deeply embedded racism and misogyny, you know?
I mean,
like a sort of literary backhoe, you know, digging it up out of the earth.
I think what we could easily do is like all of the, you know, people that Peter Griffin normally makes fun of, we could just flip it over so those people are making fun of him. And then it would easily be funnier that way.
Okay, all right, let me pitch you on another one.
Okay.
It's Family Guy, but they're all just nice to each other, and it's just people going about their lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds good to me. I mean...
I still see that being a true, because like, what do you do with all those cutaways? What do you do with all those little like inserts of random nonsense? You know, how do you work that into these people going about their normal?
I just want it to be like a series of jokes at Peter's expense. Like I that's what I want it to be. Is like it cuts away and some Mexican guy is ripping it out of Peter Griffin.
We can't change the visuals. We can't change them until Family Guy adds a thing where the entire international community fucking beats Peter Griffin to death.
That would be so
with
good.
every ethnicity and gender identity on the face of this fucking earth taking turns kicking him in the balls until that happens. I can't do anything else.
Like,
you
why
know?
Couldn't so we much. Do that? That would be
to animate that? You saying you want to animate that?
I'm down.
Okay, you and I.
That's what we're
you
do.
And I, noted 2D animators. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I mean, I want
okay.
it so much.
Well,
so.
Be sure to back our Patreon for that particular project. I also got an email here from Spencer, who was the only person to write us suggesting that we do read the pasteurization Wikipedia page. since I got no emails specifically discouraging us from reading the pasteurization wiki page, technically reading the pasteurization wiki page is in the lead.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. And Spencer also linked me to a wiki article for fur-bearing trout, which is some sort of urban legend about some, like, Icelandic trout fish that has a thick coat of fur. I don't think this is a real thing.
Is that a,
but
that can't be
I don't
thing.
Think yeah, I don't think this is a real thing.
Okay.
But yeah, that's another page on Wikipedia, for example.
The stuff that people can learn by listening to our stupid podcast about StarCraft, I mean, it's getting larger every day.
I'm just going to, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start off this episode of the Inspirational Quarterly. I'm going to hit random article on Wikipedia. Okay. And we're just going to see what that's about. Okay. All right. Here we go. Random article on Wikipedia. Pollastri. Pollastri is an Italian surname. Notable people with it include Augusto Pollastri, Italian violin maker, Bartolomeo Pollastri, Italian mathematician and astronomer, and Gaetano Pollastri, Italian luthier.
Okay.
That is the... I just read you every word of the wiki.
There's nothing else. It's just... That's it.
Nothing else. That's it. Yeah.
I had heard that the Wikipedia on toilets is one of the most interesting articles on Wikipedia. I think maybe because everyone thinks that the toilet was invented by Thomas Crapper, which I think is like probably one of the greatest urban legends of all time.
Look, we can't do this. I've already got a This Week in Family Guy. Like, okay, we're not okay. going to read any of the book. You know okay. what I mean? You and I are a hair's breadth away from adding This Week in Random article on Wikipedia as a regular segment onto this podcast.
I mean, so there must be a podcast that already does that.
Is okay, hang on.
Is
random
there
yeah. Wikipedia article podcast. Wiki Shuffle. This seems like it. Okay, Wiki Shuffle was a UK comedy podcast presented by Jack Stewart, Chris Wallace, and Philip Sharman, reliant on the Wikipedia random article button for content. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, cool. We don't have to go and start.
We don't have to do it now.
It's already been done for us. Phew. Okay, cool. Now that we finished the first nonsense segment of the show, thank you to our people who wrote into us.
What do you mean the first nonsense section of the show?
Oh, you know exactly what I mean.
Oh my god.
No. It's okay. You'll appreciate it because well, let me say that I feel like this segment of our podcast has become a sort of ongoing experiment for me to find ways in which viewing Family Guy is actually bearable. Like last week, I watched it with no audio, which was downright pleasant, dare I say.
Okay.
Nearly pleasant, okay. I would almost call it. This week, I watched an episode of season 10 of Family Guy at 2x speed. And that was an experience, mostly because I couldn't understand almost a single word that was said in the entire episode. And that's up there with muting it on things that really reduce the amount of racially charged humor. And I could tell because like this is one where Peter and his friends go to Georgia, which is just like inexplicably horribly, horribly racist there. It's like the sort of Deliverance style of like,
is
you
that,
know.
Those are the jokes they're making about
yeah.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, of course, there's like lots of weird racially charged humor that I don't even fucking know how to unpack. But I couldn't really tell because mostly I was deciphering the jokes through this sort of like, you know, chipmunk mumble. Right. Which was much better than actually watching it. I will say, And I was able, there was one joke that I was able to decipher. And can I tell you something unprecedented?
Uh-huh.
I laughed out loud.
What joke?
I laughed literally out loud. And I'll tell you the joke. So Peter and his friends go to Georgia. For some reason, the weird racist cops arrest them and send them to like old-timey minor prison or something. But they go to court for their like crimes that they were framed for, right? Okay. And Peter's like, well, at least Peter goes like, at least we'll get a fair trial. And then it cuts into the courtroom and it looks at the jury box and the jurors are all Simpsons characters.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
Every single one of them is a different character from The Simpsons. And then it goes to Peter and his friend Joe, and Peter goes, at least they're a jury of our peers. And Joe goes, I don't think they see it that way. I actually laughed out loud. That's a pretty good joke.
That is actually like a level above, right? The joke they normally make. Because
yeah,
it's not
exactly
dumb as hell. It actually takes some kind of thinking about it to be funny.
And here's the other thing, is that there were like multiple steps to the joke. You know what I mean? Like, there was a joke. Like, if all they had done was the Simpsons characters in the jury box, that would have been funny. But the, I don't think they see it that way, is like, okay, you actually took the joke and you didn't just fling it haphazardously into the bucket of script.
Yeah.
You actually examined it for like 2 seconds to see if there was more to the joke than just the literal very first thing you thought of. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, weird, right? Like, I laughed out loud and then I had a moment of almost like religious kind of reckoning, you know, have I sinned or something? It was very weird. I really barely picked up anything from this episode. So fortunately I don't have much to talk about, but I will say that there's a bit at the very end where, like, you know how at the end of a lot of these sort of sitcom TV shows, they're like, well, here's what we learned today, right? So Peter and his friends go to jail and then they get out of jail somehow. And then they're back at home and Peter goes, well, today I'd say we really learned. And then he kind of pauses and he says something like, I don't have the energy to do this. And then they just start making mouth sounds that sound like the kinds of sounds that people say to each other at the ends of sitcoms to describe the thing they learned today.
Okay.
So they're like, rah, 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 ha, 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 ha. And like, they all laugh. It's like that, right?
Right.
But that's how the whole episode sounded to me, man.
Especially because you fast-forwarded it.
That's what I mean. Like, the whole episode sounded like just consonants, you know?
Yeah.
That was basically the whole episode. So they got to the end where they're like, the joke is that they're just going through the motions. And it was really surreal. I almost couldn't tell if that's what the joke, I did go back and watch that last bit in normal speed to make sure that that was actually what was happening. It was very weird. So it was kind of fun. And it only lasted 10 minutes, you know.
A lot better.
It was over in a flash. Could barely hear it. It was over super fast. Best episode of Family Guy I've watched yet.
Wow.
If you have to watch, if you are being forced to watch Family Guy for your podcast, I highly recommend watching it at 2x speed.
I mean, you say you're being forced to, but I'm pretty sure it's your idea each time.
If any of you heroes out there are being persecuted the way I am and being forced to watch Family Guy through no fault of your own, well, let me just tell you, I'm here for you, and we're going to get through this together. All right.
Just a martyr for the cause.
God, I can't believe I made it through this week, but someone has to, you know. You're welcome, Kara. Okay. You're welcome. Thank God you've got me here.
Well, you're welcome.
But bang, we did it. We're done. Are you ready? Are you ready the book? StarCraft Ghost Nova?
Yeah, by Keith R.A. DeCandido.
You want to just briefly re-summarize the previous 276 pages of the book for me?
Before we
get started? You want to just kind of give me a lull?
Well, roughly speaking, there's a woman who was supposed to go into the military in space, and she tried to rescue her family and accidentally killed everyone and then went on the run. And it's taken a lot of pages, but eventually the cops have found her. And so of the military, and now everything's basically falling apart. And then now we're back at the main detective who has just woken up Ripley style in a medical facility, and he's about to probably, I don't know, say stuff about what's happening to the military. That's as far as I've got in the whole story. I mean, that's what I'm getting. I don't know what you're getting. That's what I'm getting. He's going to say some earth-shattering facts about what has happened in the previous, I don't know, 276 pages.
I'm sorry. Did you say in space?
In space.
This takes place in space?
In space!
This has been in outer space this whole time?
In space! StarCraft is in space.
All right. Let's double check that with Subsurian before we go stating things like that on the record.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is controversial that StarCraft might be in space.
Yeah, right. That could have.
That's a controversial fact.
That's one of those ones that the mods have had a warring sort of back and forth inside of the edits history of some StarCraft.
I feel like after the credits of StarCraft, it should just like have a subtitle in space.
No, that's the start. That's like in the first. That's like the first thing where they have like the pan over the exposition scene, right, of StarCraft, right? And then that's the card at the bottom. Space.
Space.
The year
question mark.
The year question, yeah. The year, no, they should do it like, you know, people will be like, the year 19XX, they should be like the year 25XX, right? That would be the StarCraft version of it.
Okay. So, where did we get to? So, so Malice just woken up in a medical facility, right? And, let's see.
Honeycutt is the person who came in and told. What did Honeycutt? Could you summarize what Honeycutt told to Malcolm for me?
Well, I mean, first he said that he should lubricate himself, remember?
Oh, I forgot about that. Yes.
Which was a weird thing to say to someone. When you wake up, possibly in a medical gown, close to naked, you don't want anyone saying, please lube up,
baby.
You don't want that to happen.
You're on the pasture, lube up.
And also, apparently, Mal had always been prone to space sickness, which is funny in this IP.
Because the whole story is in space.
In space! Anyway, Honeycutt is a man in uniform that Mal didn't recognize. And he's got this, like, status board in one hand, which I assume is like a clipboard, but more space-oriented.
Space clipboard.
Space clipboard.
Yeah. It's made of pure energy.
Yeah, Commander Hunnicutt, Commander Hunnicutt looks like a recruitment poster model for the military, apparently, which I think is like, it's like a kind of, you know, in Starship Troopers, everyone looks kind of like that, where they're like from the military posters, where they're like, join the military, come kill some motherfucking alien, you know, like it, that's yeah. what it's kind of like. And then he says, you're on the poster. Mm-hmm. And it's that moment.
And then he
like,
says, "And then he great. Says, Luba,
Luba, you're on the poster." so there you go. Anyway, Mal starts gulping down these ice chips. And Mal, you know, obviously Mal has a lot of questions for this guy because he's not sure how he got on the ship. And he basically asks what the Dominion Navy Medical Corps is. And also, like, he asked this question, how do you guys get the Pasteur? Which obviously, you know, intimates the idea that the Pasteur was not previously Terran. Is that something that you get from that?
Or can no? I be honest with you?
What?
I don't think I actually wanted to go back over what Honeycutt's deal is.
But like, I think it's a good question though. Like, Mal is like, how did you guys get the Pasteur, which is like the worst ship name of all time. And then that, and it's, it implies that Mal thinks the Pasteur might be like a really good ship, but it's like not a great name for a ship. It's like, do you like, why would you want to be on a ship called the Pasteur? It sounds like, would you like, you know, the good ship butter? Like, what? What?
I'm just saying, I don't... Again, I'm being just honest with you here, because we have a line of communication. I'm now seeing that when I asked you to summarize this, that I that wasn't what I really wanted.
What did you really want?
New. More. Different.
New, more, and different?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because you start, no, because again, I just, if we're like workshopping sort of, you know, how to make this podcast more engaging, I realized that as soon as you started talking about the thing we had already done, I was instantly bored. and I, you know, I realize now, like a fucking calendar year into doing this podcast, I'm not really paying attention to the book. Really, I'm just watching new words appear and like absorbing them.
Yeah.
And it's like I'm just getting like feelings and tastes and impressions of story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm not processing this into a linear series of events that's happened one after the other. I'm just getting like a, you know, a bit of a Jeffrey there, you know.
Yeah.
Ooh. That's kind of a Garth Duke kind of vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Honeycutt's cool, but he had his moment in the sun. And it was when he said, lubricate yourself.
Look, if you're saying that, then you did want to go back to the lubrication moment. So
no, it was really a great moment. Yeah. It was a great moment, but that was his peak. Everything past lubricate yourself is a valley.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to do the valleys. I want only the hits, right?
Okay. So we've got to the part where essentially he tells Mal, you know, your spine was fractured. You had dozens of broken bones. If the Marines hadn't gotten you to the medical facility in Osborne when they did, you might have been paralyzed. So basically, he says, you know, you'll be happy to know I foresee a full recovery with some spinal treatments, a few new bones, and a few months of physical therapy. So, like, that kind of implies that, like, Mal's entire body has been replaced.
Yes.
Entirely replaced.
We've replaced you with a different, more competent person.
Right. And then Mal gets really confused, particularly the notion that he owed his life to Ndochi's goons. Why was I brought to Osborne? It was the only Arbital facility that was still secure, and it was the flashpoint for the evacuation. So, you know, he got evacuated from the, I assume, like, giant explosion. In fact, he hasn't said really nearly enough as far as Mal was concerned, and Mal fully intended to get the truth out of him. When will we be returning to Tarsonis? And Honeycutt suddenly became intent on his status board. You know, his space board, his space.
Made of pure energy.
Yeah. Director Bick will be able to answer these questions. Okay, so Director Bick. 277. Mal had conducted enough interrogations in his time to read the doctor's expression. Going back to Tarsonis was not on the agenda. Manxk must have gotten through. The doctor whispered some instructions to the nurse, who had rematerialized without Mal's noticing or caring that much, and then looked towards the bed. I'll be back to check on you later.
Bed is made of pure energy.
I'll be counting the nanoseconds. I assume that's sarcastic on Mal's part, but you know, we don't know.
Mal is not a person who communicates with other human beings in a normal way.
No, he's like a bit odd.
Yeah. So
smiling insincerely, there we go. Honeycutt said, "So nice to see you're regaining your sense of humor." Then he laughed, the nurse falling behind. And then Mal looked around. It was a pretty standard looking hospital room, no windows, but that wasn't surprising if they were on a ship. Usually only generals or admirals, he guessed, got the use of plasteel in their cabins and maybe their offices. Plasteel? I don't know what that is, but I mean, okay. Otherwise, he was hooked up to a monitor, the display of which was facing away from him. Parish forbid he should actually know aspects of his own health before a doctor does. He also had the room to himself. There were no other beds, and Kalerchian wondered what he had done to deserve that VIP treatment. The vibration in the bed changed, and Mal got a little queasy. Then after about a minute, the vibration went back to what it was. Mal figured that this was Director Bick. This was this Director Bick person's shuttle docking. Okay. Skip ahead. Agent Kalerchian, good to see you up and about, he said in a scratchy voice. My name is Kevin.
Wait, why did you skip ahead?
Because we've actually read this part before.
We have?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Apparently my sense of new is not as finely honed as I thought it was.
So
wait, the bulky man in a suit? He'd shaved his head? What? We hadn't read that.
I thought we had. We got to Director Bick at least, no?
No. A bulky man. Okay, hang on. Let me read this. A moment later, the door slid open to reveal a bulky man in a suit. He had shaved his head, and the stubble on his head indicated that if he hadn't, he'd be mostly bald anyhow. We would have talked about that. Come on, that's a line. That's a sentence. I just read that sentence and I'm like, Davy and Kara would stop to discuss that.
Well, is that because he's kind of you know, like he's basically just kind of one of those people who's trying to pretend like they could have hair if they wanted to have hair, but he doesn't. He doesn't actually have hair. He's trying to hide the fact that he doesn't. Or why is that interesting to you?
Well, okay, here's the first thing that comes to mind is Fagin's follicle stimulator, right? Because this to me seems like a man
who could use it
and maybe is already using it. And maybe that's why there's a little stubble on his head, right?
Right.
And if we remember, Fagin's follicle stunter, if I remember my own podcast correctly, causes him an irrational amount of rage. Does that sound correct?
Yes. Right. And I think it's partly because, I mean, obviously it's stimulating his head in bizarre ways, but also because it probably doesn't work very well.
Wait, does Fagin have follicle stunter or follicle stimulator? I don't remember.
I don't even remember. It was like such a absurd...
He has follicle stunter. So, because... That's what I was. I thought it was follicle stimulator. I thought this guy was. Bick is naturally bald and is taking follicle stimulator to get more hair.
Uh-huh.
And Fagin is taking follicle stunter to get less hair.
Right.
That was where I was going with this.
Okay.
Right.
Nice. Well,
this is I've got a fucking beautiful mind kind of newspaper wall here of follicle characters in StarCraft Ghost Nova and their relation to follicle medicine.
I mean, it is a bit weird that this sort of stuff is happening. you know, in space, people really care about their hair for some reason. They have to have
in space. In space, no one can see you preen.
Exactly.
Anyway, I just thought we would have. I just thought I would have remembered talking about this guy. But anyway,
he had a round head balanced on a round body, so like a weeble, and piercing blue eyes. So like
he's BB-8 from Star Wars.
Basically, that's kind of weird.
He's just. Just a little ball rolling around, but like a second ball balancing on top, rotating in the exact opposite direction so that the top ball is always on top.
And he has a scratchy voice. Okay. My name is Kevin Bick. I run the ghost program. Uh-oh. He runs the ghost program. What happened to Director Kalyani? There have been a few changes since, so Commander Honeycutt said. Bick turned to glare at the door. He wasn't supposed to tell you anything. He didn't reveal the nature of those changes, just that there were some, which frankly, I would have worked out on my own by his rank, his uniform, and the name of the service he's in. Oh, so like Mal is getting a bit shirty here. Because, you know, Mal's supposed to be smart, but he's actually not. Very smart.
Well, Mal's got nothing to lose. He doesn't care who he pisses off. All that matters is that he gets the job done.
Oh, we got to this part where he said Tarsonas fell to the Zerg, right?
No, we didn't read this. We did not read this.
Okay, he says, fair point.
I will literally bet you $10 we didn't read this.
He says, fair point. He took a breath. The Confederacy of Man is no more, Agent Kalerchian. Tarsonas fell to the Zerg. To the Zerg? That shocked Mal. He thought it was Mengsk who was threatening the homeworld, not the aliens. Yes, with the council destroyed, the human race has been united under a new leader who will bring us to salvation from the alien hordes that are trying to destroy us. That sounds like a party line to me. Doesn't that sound like someone like is writing that on a pamphlet or something? Like, the human race has been united under a new leader who will bring us to salvation from the alien hordes that are trying to destroy us. Like, that's... No.
You know, it's such a, it's such a sort of fiction, what am I trying to say? Like, a fictional world, plot device that a global catastrophe will somehow unify all humans.
Yeah.
Which in the year of our Lord 2022 is a difficult, sort of notion to really swallow.
Yes, it seems silly.
Yeah, but you're right that it is very much something that you would say if you were, you know, for, let us say, a beneficiary of the New World Order, right? If you were somehow in the ranks of the new Earth hegemony, right? Like, so is Director Bick here? You know, we don't even know who this new person is.
No. Mal, no, we know he's the head of the ghost program.
When you said it sounds like a party line, like I knew what you meant in terms of like political party, but it made me think that you meant like a pickup line, like someone at a party saying this to someone to try to get in their pants, you know?
No, like I mean, like, you know, it sounds like something that Bush would say in a speech because someone had written it down. You know?
No. I get exactly what you mean. I'm saying, what if you tried to use this line to pick someone up at a party?
I mean, that would be quite difficult considering what you say is very dry.
Okay, but let's workshop it. All right. Let's role play. You're all right. I'm at a party. I'm standing here in the corner and you come up to me, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Are you gonna open me or
shall
what?
I open?
That oh. you're this is
am I
is
am I open. Am I the person who is doing the dry?
You're dry hitting open. On me. You're hitting on me with this line about Earth about the human race being united under a new leader. Okay.
Hi there. Did you know? The human race has been united under a new leader who will bring us to salvation from the alien hordes that are trying to destroy us.
Are you gonna buy me a drink?
I mean, as long as it helps us along with this new leader, of course I will.
All right, we're done. Sorry, I was hoping that somehow you would finesse it into something sexier, but that didn't happen.
There's absolutely no way you could finesse this because there's.
All right, come on. All right, No. So we're swap out. Okay. All right. All right, you're over in the corner of the party.
All right. Okay.
Hey, here Earth's uniting under a new human leader. Sounds like you want to, I could lead your human race, if you know what I mean.
That is so bad.
Wait.
You're supplying them with the thing they don't know, and then they're trying muscle in on it like it's
hang
a
on,
thing.
Hang on, I'm gonna do another one. Okay, all right. They say Earth is being united under a new leader in opposition to the Zerg invasion. I'm feeling like doing a little Zerg invasion myself, if you know what I mean.
So terrible.
What about it's our last night on Earth kind of thing? Is there any meat on that bone?
How about something like, you know, those alien hordes that are trying to destroy us? How about we do a little salvation on our own whilst that's going on?
Yeah. Wait, ooh, you could even take this angle on it. They haven't announced who is going to be the new leader of Earth, but if you play your cards right, you could get with the guy who might be the new king of Earth.
Oh no, you should never use the word might.
But if it's possible, right? Is that not a winner?
No, it's gotta be like, but I'm gonna be the new leader, so you better get in before, you know.
Yeah, okay, all right, okay, no, this is good. You're nailing it, right? That's perfect. Confidence. I am going to be the new leader of Earth.
Damien, you got it to flirt. You've got to actually have some confidence. You can't be like, I might be awesome, but we don't know yet. We have no idea.
I might be great in bed. Don't you want to find out?
Do you ever feel like trying out someone who might be the world's best lover? Like, does that make any sense?
You know, hey babe, I'm if you be the first person to have sex with me, you might discover that I'm the world's greatest love. Both of us might discover that I'm the world's greatest love.
I just wanted to let you know that I may or may not have crabs. So that is something you may find out. You might find that out.
That's another angle you can play. Hey, babe, did you know that I'm not the one responsible for the downfall of humanity? It's the Zerg, you know? Yeah. Right? Like, now we know that you're not the guy that's going to collapse all of human society because it's something else did it, right?
Right.
So that's like a point in your favor kind of thing. Okay, we're good. Thank you for going down this road with me. I felt like when you said party line, but it gave me a feeling that I needed to like investigate. So I appreciate that.
Okay. Mal rolled his eyes, which I guess is what you would do if someone had flirted with you with that line.
Yeah, wait, is director Pick coming on to Mal?
I know,
what
he's
the
very
fuck?
Uncomfortable now.
This is so unprofessional.
I know. Let me guess, King Arcturus I? Emperor Mangsk is not someone to trifle with, Agent Kalerchian, Bick said frostily. You do well to remember that. In any case, the Emperor saw no reason to dissolve the Ghost Program, though it has moved its headquarters to the Ghost Academy on Ursa. That's where we're headed. Who's we?
Wait, so yeah. So hang on. So now they're doing the like Mengsk is the new Emperor of Earth.
Yeah. Thing, yeah.
Right? So this is the I forget because we've talked about this so many bajillions of times, but he wasn't previously the Emperor of Earth.
No.
Right?
No.
He was like a rebel guy.
Yeah.
And now he's the Emperor of Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, and we're just, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but, you know.
I think there's like a whole other book that's how that happened.
Right.
I want to say there's a whole other book about that.
Okay.
So I just, we'll just sort of footnote here. A different book explains why that happens.
Yeah.
So if you at home need to pause this podcast and go read that book, you can do that and come back.
Who's we in this case? We've picked up some refugees from a few worlds that have been overrun by the Zerg who've asked for Dominion help. We've also got some new ghost recruits for the program. Here's the $1 million question, Davey. What about Nova? Which is the only question
we've been asking for 279 pages. Every single one of these 279 pages, one of us has asked, what about Nova?
And the answer has just been, I don't know.
It's like, do you know that What About Bob? Is it Bill Murray? Is it Bill Murray movie? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
The movie? It's like Bill Murray. It's like a Richard Dreyfuss and it is Bill Murray, right? Hang on. Let me just make sure of this. God, this podcast is so fascinating. Every moment of it is like it's Bill Murray. So it's basically where like Bill Murray Richard Dreyfuss is a therapist and Bill Murray is his client. And it's like, it starts off Richard Dreyfuss is like very serious and stuffy. And then slowly Bill Murray drives him insane. It's like a slowly Richard Dreyfuss going mad. And that's like, and the title of it is What About Bob? Right? And Bob is the client as Bill Murray. And that's kind of, that came to mind when it says, what about Nova, right?
Yeah.
Where at the start of reading this book, I felt like we had a real intention to sit down and learn Nova's story. And like slowly we've been pulled apart by the variety, vast array of characters who are distinctly not Nova, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, I don't know where I was going with any of that. Go ahead.
At that, Big smiled. Mal hadn't thought it was possible for Big to be any uglier, but the smile went and proved him wrong.
Mal is literally someone with a smile that makes people, like, want to die on the inside. So if Mal thinks this guy's smile is bad, it's probably really bad.
Yeah. She's our star pupil. I've never seen anyone so determined to make it through this program. Director, I've been a Wrangler for over a year, and I have no recollection of you having anything to do with the ghosts in any of that time, so I'm curious how many people you've seen in this program at all. Wow, that is a burn. The smile fell. Get some rest, Agent Kalerchian. You've got a long recovery ahead of you. He turned to leave. You haven't answered all my questions, Director. Bick stopped and turned around. What question haven't I answered, Agent Kalerchian? What happened to Director Kilyani? A pause. Then, if the human race is to survive, Agent Kalerchian, it needs unity. Old rivalries must be set aside. People who can't do that are expendable, Kalerchian answers. We understand each other, Bick said with a nod. With that, he left. So Kilyani refused to play ball with the new emperor. Either Mengsk had her arrested, or she ate her gun. Figures. Wow, okay, so she has died since we last tuned in.
Well, now hold on. Maybe she's in prison for life.
Maybe she was arrested. But I think it's more likely that she's never going to be around anymore.
Hang on. there's one resource that is always.
Oh no, the wiki
can answer this question for us. StarCraft Wiki, brought to you by our good friend Subsurian, Ilsa Kilianni.
That's her.
All right, let me see. What do you think? What do you want to bet is the wiki's final say on Kilianni?
She's dead.
Ilsa Kilianni's fate is unknown.
Oh no!
Though Kalerji and Spess suspect she was arrested or killed herself. That's it. That's it. That's all there is. We now know everything.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. We could ask Keith if he wants to like clarify that.
Yeah, we could write that down for later, maybe.
Alright, I'll write that down for later.
Okay. He still had many questions, but he wasn't so sure he wanted the answers to them. If Tarsonis really had been overrun by the Zerg right after Mengsk was rumored to be attacking Tarsonis' defenses, it meant that the Confederacy's seat of government was set up by the new monarch in order to facilitate his takeover. Funny, he never once said he wanted power, merely wanted to stop the Confederacy's abuses. Probably refused the crime twice before accepting it too, that lousy slag. He wondered what happened to the gutter. Why did he wonder what happened to the gutter?
Because after the 6 months he spent in the gutter, he learned
came to love them.
And he when it finally came to it, Malcolm would protect them, even if it meant giving his own life.
Whatever the evacuation plan was, he doubted anyone down there was part of it. Whoever the Annihilators left alive were probably killed by the Zerg. Fagan's people. Martina Dharma. Serge
Martina? Fulmer.
Mari Fonseca. Are any of them still alive? Probably not.
Terrence. What about Terrence?
Oh no, Terrence.
No, Terrence.
Mal stared at the ceiling for a long time before the nurse came in and pressed a few buttons. And then Mal found himself involuntarily drifting off to sleep.
What? Why is Mal so fixated on the gutter? What about everything? What about all of it? Like, doesn't he have a... He doesn't live in the gutter. He doesn't... Like, he has a life. He knows people, presumably. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is he just... Is the old... Like, did he replace every single human being in his life with someone in the gutter?
I mean, maybe. He just, like, moved there.
That's legitimately what this makes it sound like, you know? Like, he has nothing that matters to him except for the gutter.
Oh, bless him.
Oh.
Wait, do you think he would have adopted Nova's cat?
Ooh, see, that's a great question.
Weeks later, Mal found himself on Ursa, undergoing grueling physical therapy sessions in order to make his legs remember all the things they used to do naturally. Mal had never realized just how much work walking actually entailed. I mean, did he ever have a cause to walk? I mean, I don't know.
What do you mean, did he ever have a cause to walk?
I mean, it's the future. He could use any number of hover facilities. Oh, you know?
That's right. Like, what's her name? Andrea Tigor? Do you remember her?
Yeah, with her little doodad.
She fucking flew on a chair. Like,
yeah.
She had a flying chair.
I know.
Who needs feet?
Exactly.
In space.
I know. So
a chair made of pure energy.
When he wasn't in physical therapy sessions, he floated around in a convol chair.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Which not only kept him off his weakened legs, but had nanoprobes that monitored and repaired and maintained his battered body parts.
What the fuck is he complaining about? Just use your goddamn hover chair.
I know, that's cool. He'd been thoroughly debriefed by Bick, who also filled him in on the specifics of what had gone on in the weeks he was unconscious. To Mal's regret, Major Ndochi and her Annihilators were still going strong, now part of the Dominion Marines, and boasting the best Zerg kill rate amongst all the Marine divisions. Mal also...
Who's the best? We are.
We are.
Who's the best? We are.
Yeah. Mel also checked up on Nova, which is the main question we all have, is where the hell is Nova and what is she up to?
What about Nova?
Though he never spoke to her.
Every day, Mal goes to Director Bick's office and he goes, Director Bick, what about Nova? And then he, like, crosses his arms in a, you know, a funky kind of way. And then, you know, the theme music plays.
Yeah. He would spend time in the observation rooms that were located above the training center, watching her learn various martial arts skills each morning, practicing her psionic skills in the afternoons, and working on weapons training in the evenings, just like young women do.
Yeah.
Normal
post murderous slave lord thing. Yeah.
One day, while he was watching Nova and four other trainees running an obstacle course under the watchful...
Is it weird that Mal is, like, sitting in his magical hover chair just watching Nova?
It's real creepy.
Is that kind of creepy?
Yeah. And she's like, who's that guy?
He's just, like, in his hovering chair.
It's really weird.
And the chair, to get the chair, this is what I'm imagining. I don't think this is probably real StarCraft lore, but, like, I'm imagining that to make the chair go places, you have to tell it where you want it to go. You know, like, chair. To the kitchen, right? Things like that. And so he has to tell the chair, take me to see Nova.
The chair every time is like, not again.
The chair is, yeah, exactly. The chair, like, the chair did it the first few times. But
the
then...
chair is like the kind of humorous 80s sidekick that's a robot.
Yeah,
you
yes.
Know what I mean?
Yes, the chair, yeah, the chair talks and makes, like, witty quips and everything. Right. Exactly. And the chair knows how fucking weird it is that all he does is just go sit and watch Nova.
One day while he was watching Nova and four other trainees running an obstacle course under the watchful eye of Sergeant Hartley, Mal was joined by an imposing figure with a thick mustache. looking up at the man from his convul chair.
Is it Handy Anderson?
Mal recognized the face instantly. Mr. Manksk.
It is Handy Anderson.
Or should that be Your Holiness now? A smile peeked out from under the mustache. Mr. Manksk will do for now, Agent Clerchian, as long as it's the two of us in the room. In public, I prefer Mr. Emperor. That sounds like a funny...
Is that a thing emperors...
Emperors
go by?
Hi, Mr. Emperor.
Hello, please. Mr. Emperor was my father. Call me Emperor Daddy.
I'm Daddy Emperor.
I'm smooth baby Emperor. Like, Mr. Emperor is the dumbest sounding title. Like, that's like if you wanted to distinctly not be taken seriously, you would insist on yourself being referred to as Mr. Emperor, right? Is that like... Yep. But is that, what would be the actual thing you'd call an emperor? It's just emperor,
like,
right?
Your holiness, your
holiness,
your
eminency,
highness? I don't
your
know.
High, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you'd call, because like with a president, you could say Mr. President, right?
Yeah, or like, what is that, what else would people say? Imperator? I don't know what that means, but yeah.
Yeah.
No idea. Anyway, it's Daddy Emperor now.
Daddy
Emperor. Mal nodded. That's good. You don't insist on a title like Your Highness that elevates you too high. Mister is a common honorific, the same one used by democratic governments for their politicians. Like, Mal just, like, offloading the things he knows from the dictionary here. Like, I don't know. keeps your man of the people image intact, despite being an absolute monarch.
But no, Mal, no, it doesn't. It makes him sound like an ultra dweeb bot.
I know,
right?
It's like
it makes him sound like
Mr.
a turbo
Emperor.
Door. Hello, Mr. Emperor. Your 5 o'clock is here to see you, Mr. Emperor. Like, it doesn't. It just, there's no way for it not to make you sound like you are a turbo dork.
Yeah.
Like, I just, yeah, I don't see it. Like, All right, Kara. Use Mr. Emperor in a pickup line.
Oh, Mr. Emperor. It's so big.
Okay. Really. Well, all right. Now,
that's like halfway through.
That's when you say it like that, it does actually kind of work. It sort of works. But you know why that works? You know why that works? Is because that doesn't sound real. And that's the schmaltzy sexiness of it. We both know that the things I'm saying aren't real things, but that's like the mood we're getting into.
Yeah, it's like a pretense of something, or
exactly. Like could you say Mr. Emperor in a sexy voice to the actual emperor is my question. Right, do you know what I mean? Would that work?
You could be like, Mr. Emperor, thank you for inviting me, or I don't know. It's all
okay, because like here's the scenario I'm imagining. Like, let's say that the U.S. president, let's say a new U.S. president gets inaugurated into office, and he and his wife go to the White House for their first night in the White House, and like they're climbing into bed, and she says like, "Oh, Mr. President," or something like that, right? You know, kind of like, "Oh, look at the two of us. This is the actual thing I'm calling you now." Could you? If the emperor and his wife were going to bed on the first night of him being emperor, and his wife crawls into bed and goes, "Mr. Emperor, is that a thing? Does that feel good?"
It's weird still.
Still weird,
it's
right?
Still weird. Yeah.
Like, even in the most, like, there's no situation that will be more appropriate to say the phrase Mr. Emperor in than that one. Right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Yeah, it's an odd thing to say.
It's not good. It's not a good thing. Yeah.
Right. Mensk chuckled. "I'm impressed, Agent Clergy, and none of the Wranglers I've met, the ones who survived the Zerg attack on Tarsonis anyhow, are especially intuitive. They simply use the tools at hand." Another chuckle. "Which raises the question of why it took you 6 months to find that young girl."
Yeah.
That is the thing we were all asking.
That's the two questions we've been asking for a long time. What about Nova? Why the fuck hasn't Malcolm done anything?
"Turning away to watch the 5 trainees doing 20 push-ups on their fists, Mal struggled as best he could in the combo chair. Maybe I'm not as smart as you think I am."
I like the implication here that Malcolm is that the idea that Malcolm understands why Mr. Emperor is a good thing to say makes him smart. But Mensk is literally like, "You're intelligent enough to get why Mr. Emperor is such a good thing, and yet you couldn't even do your fucking job." It's like, hey, Mensk, maybe Malcolm is just bad at things and your title is also stupid.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe Malcolm is just dumb at every single
thing.
Why does
everyone think that Mal is like really smart? Like, there's no real reason to
But what keeps happening throughout this whole book is that every time he fucks up, someone goes, "How does someone as intelligent as you fuck up?"
It was so weird. Why do they always think this stuff?
Hey, everyone, let's put the pieces of this together, right? We can solve this puzzle together. Malcolm's an idiot. That's across the board.
"I suppose anything's possible," says Mensk. "Anyhow, you know the answer to that. When authority doesn't help the people don't help them." Oh, this is the moral of the story. "Nobody in the gutter wanted to help me find a little girl, especially after she became the tool of someone the people in the gutter liked and respected." Smiling wryly, Mal added, you understand that it's why people are calling you Mr. Emperor now. The council and the old families only cared about themselves and only did things for themselves. So when the Zerg and the Protoss showed up, the people in charge were completely unequipped to do anything for the people they were supposed to serve. They were so busy improving their own position, they forgot about what the position was. In the end, it killed both them and the people, paving the way for you. So that's quite meaty.
This is pretty meaty. And I gotta say, you know, we've talked a lot about Keith's, you know, big, I don't know what to call it, SJW energy here, right? You know what I mean? Like our, Keith is here to take down, the old guard, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, this is like a socialist, message of a book,
Keith,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Keith is trying to dismantle the power structure for the benefit of the people. I feel like it coming from the mouth of a man who couldn't do his own job is a finicky phrasing of that message. Because,
and also, like, we're very much being told this information instead of being shown it. I mean, I can see how he's saying, about the gutter, but, like, we don't actually get to see the event, right?
Right. I feel like, you tell me what you think, but I feel like throughout this book, we've definitely heard a lot of people saying, like, oh, the council did this, you know what I mean, or things like that. The council doesn't care about people. But we never see any of that. It's just people saying the council is responsible for this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, it might not be in Keith's purview to just, you know, think about it further. You know, like, a lot of this stuff is actually given to you and it has a specific remit, right? And, like, you can't go out of that remit and then start writing about something that someone else might be writing a book about. So I don't know if he was allowed to even approach the political stuff, right?
I think Keith was allowed to approach the political stuff.
You think?
Literally reading this last paragraph? Yeah, right. I mean, that's all I mean. I just literally mean in the sense that, like, that's a pretty political paragraph right there, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. And besides, everyone wants to know a story. Everyone wants to read a story about, like, the Council of Men. You know what I mean? That's just a thing that sci-fi readers of sci-fi books like, you know, the Council of Earth or whatever. That's everyone gets in on that shit, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I don't know if he was, like, not interested in writing that side of things or whether he was just, like, really into just, I mean, maybe he didn't have very much time to write this book either, you know?
Yeah, well, you know who we can ask about that is our good friend Keith R.A. Candido.
Yeah, so we can ask him, like, why he didn't go into that stuff.
All I'm saying is that to have that paragraph be the explanation for why the main character of this book couldn't do his job is not a great look, right?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, Malcolm, no, sure. Maybe the power structures are set up to disadvantage the common man. Or maybe you just are a shitty cop, right?
Yeah, well, like, okay, so if we keep reading on, like, basically he's like, Malcolm's getting called out here. Because then Mansk goes on to say, a remarkably canny observation for someone who's on a hunt or unconscious when most of this happened.
That's exactly what I'm saying, right? Like, and I'm not, this is no comment on the actual nature of what Malcolm's saying here at all, right? I'm just saying it could have come from someone who was, like, a more up to date with what is happening in the world.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's what you don't want your proselytizing character to be one who is radically disconnected from what's actually happening in the world.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Malcolm is super disconnected. Malcolm doesn't know shit.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Miles started, been catching up on UNN a lot the past week or two. Nice of you to keep it intact. The people deserve to know the truth. That prompted a bark of derisive laughter from Mal. The next time UNN gets anywhere near the truth will also be the first time. To Mal's surprise, Max came back with a more genuine laugh of his own. Perhaps.
Well, now, do you remember, Subsurian told us that after Manx takes over, that he adopts UNN into, like, a state-run propaganda thing with Handy Anderson as the head of it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, what you and I know, because of our insider info, is that Manx is actually using UNN and Handy Anderson to be his, like, whole... info department or whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I hope we get Handy Anderson
back. Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I still feel sad that, you know, we didn't get a Mal who actually experienced the things that we're talking about here, you know?
Well, that's, and just again, going to things that get described, but we don't actually experience. It's like, oh, yeah. The events of the story already happened. Is there a world? I mean, like, is there a world in which that is a compelling and unique perspective on global events? Is to not actually experience them, or to be, because what you have stories that are like, tangential to big global events, where say a person on the street who isn't indirectly involved in any of those global events is impacted by them, and that's a whole kind of storytelling, right? But then you have protagonist was unconscious during the time in which those events took place. That's not really the same thing, is it?
I mean, it could be like during the planning of the book, Keith was like, oh, I think this stuff will be more interesting than this stuff, and then he just like didn't. You know what
and
I mean?
It is,
like,
and it's a little backwards for a major IP like StarCraft to be like, you know, I'm gonna show the ongoing and circular nature of a cop's attempts and failures to find someone, but let's not show the Zerg literally invading Earth. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder who at Blizzard went, oh, yeah, that sounds like something our fans will really love.
Yeah, but, like, maybe they want to make a game that's, like, about the start of that or something, right? And so they don't want it to be set in stone about what it looks like and what the details of it are by a novelist outside of the company, right?
Oh,
so that's what I'm saying about the remit, you know? Like, sometimes they're like, you can't really write these details in because we don't know what they are yet, you know?
Well, hang on. Let me ask this. Nova trains to be a ghost on board the Pasteur, right? Like, that's the ship they're on.
Yeah.
Right now. I'm so curious whether there's like a training. There was a training mission at the start of the StarCraft Ghost video game, and if there was, did it take place on board the Pasteur?
Yeah,
that would be fucking bonkers, wouldn't it?
It would be kind of weird.
That would be super weird.
Like, what?
Yeah, that would be so weird. But that's the kind of thing that you'd think wouldn't happen, because that would be the writer of the book boxing the game developers in. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They'd be like, no. We want to name the ship. You don't get to name the ship.
Yeah. Right? Well, they might have named it already by this time. I don't know.
Maybe Malcolm didn't name it. Maybe they named it and he took the name Pasteur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I think that's, yeah. Shall we bookmark it there?
Sure. That's a good place to stop. This is like, you know, the big chat between Manx and Mal. All the details are coming out.
Speaking of, there are no strangers this week because we met our good friend Arcturus Manx.
That is true.
And that means that, our William Butler Yeats quote continues onward. If you at home think that you know of a way to say Mr. Emperor in a way that doesn't sound like child baby talk, send it to us at theinspirationalquarterly@gmail.com. I don't think we're going to get any responses to that.
How many people are still listening? Is it like 4?
If you're still listening to the Inspirational Quarterly, email us at theinspirationalquarterly@gmail.com. We're really, there's got to be so few people still listening at this point. Like, we can fucking say whatever we want now, you know? We can spend like 20 minutes on Mr. Emperor and it doesn't matter anymore.
You know? Mr. Emperor.
Kara, say some nonsense to take us out on this episode. See you next week, everyone!